Podcast time. Who's pumped? Are you excited? Man, I'm exhausted. Walter's not here. He's at the gym. And you know, it might be for the best because I'll keep the monologue thing really short because I'm playing two interviews today. I'll get into that in a second. I just had a crazy experience. I was at a coffee place. I needed Walter there. I was at a coffee place, drinking my coffee. I sit out in the patio because I like to smoke some cigarettes and get some writing done. Now, I'm not a big write in a coffee house guy. It's always weird to me. I like to be alone. I like a relaxing atmosphere. But, you know, I can't smoke in my house. And sometimes when I'm really hammering out a premise or hammering out a writing project, I like to just feed myself cigarettes and coffee and just hammer it out. So I'm there. This guy comes up to me, you know, his friend is sitting over at another table, and he goes, hey, man, you got a cigarette, you know? I was like, yeah, okay, so I give him a cigarette. And he goes and he sits down, and I keep writing. A few seconds later, like 30 seconds later, his friend comes up. Hey, man, you got a cigarette? I'm like, yeah, I guess. I mean, I just gave your friend one, you know, there you go. I go back to writing. Then they both come back up and they say, hey, give us some cigarettes. I say, no, I already gave you guys some cigarettes and so you guys are good. And they go, no, I don't, give us some cigarettes. And I said, no, I'm not going to give you cigarettes. These are my cigarettes and I need them because I'm addicted to them and I don't have a lot of money. And here's the thing that got me, okay? And I didn't go into this with these guys, but this isn't a cheap coffee place. They're outside drinking these iced fucking $5 things. Like, dude, you can buy a pack of cigarettes. You know you can make your own coffee. I only go to the coffee place because it's a change of atmosphere. All right? It's an atmospheric thing. I've got coffee at home. I realize I can make it for 30 cents a cup. I mean, so I'm there to relax and get out of my house a little, you know? It's important. You gotta get out. But I said, no, I can't give you guys any more cigarettes, man. I need these cigarettes. You know, I'm not going to be able to buy another pack for a while. And the guy goes, you know, don't make me call my boys. And I was like, and I was legitimately confused because it always takes me a while to realize when I'm being bullied. I didn't realize I was being bullied. At first, I thought that his boys had cigarettes. That's why he was going to call his boy. I seriously thought that. I was like, cool. Well, you should probably call them then. And because I thought they were going to come with cigarettes. But they were going to come to hurt me, harm me, cause physical harm to my body is what they were going to do. And he's like, you know, don't make me call my boys. And it kind of dawned on me a little bit that's why he was going to call his boys. I don't know if he was referring to his children or perhaps some sort of posse that he rolls with. I assume a car has to be involved to roll with a posse. And then you can roll deep, like you roll in six deep. I've never known what that meant. I don't know what the depth of the rolling within a posse. I think if I had a posse, I think it would be a medium depth. I'm not sure. I think it depends on what sort of watch I'm wearing. The better the watch, the more depth you can have. I don't know. But I say, look, man, I'm not going to give you any fucking cigarettes. And that's when I apparently crossed the line because I cursed. And that offended the gang members. So they got a little in my, in my grill a little bit. There was some slight grill overlay. And I'm very sensitive about my grill. I don't like my grill to be gotten into. It's my grill. Only I'm allowed in my grill. You can't come into my grill. You know, I'm proud of this grill. And you can't just come over here expecting me to let you use my grill. Plus, I'm a vegetarian. Are those veggie burgers? Those aren't Boca burgers? Well, now I'm going to have to clean the whole grill after you're done cooking. So I don't... Get out of my grill, man. You know? And it turned into this whole thing, and I got out of there. You know, I was eventually, I was like, look, you can't have any fucking cigarettes. And I said, and you're not allowed to be mad at somebody for not giving you something, okay? Had you given me money for cigarettes, there was an agreement, and then I bailed, that's fine. But you can't legitimately be upset because I'm not giving you a fucking handout. You're sitting there with your $6 coffees. Go buy your own fucking cigarettes, all right? If you need to call your boys, okay? Or whatever, but I'm leaving anyway because you're fucking annoying. And I got up and you know, they didn't do shit. But I was like, it got a little weird there, got a little tense. And I'm not good with confrontation. I'm not good with confrontation, especially when boys and grills are involved. So anyway, I just wish Walter was there because Walter was at the gym and he's in a class. He's learning the Israeli fighting, the Krav Maga, which I thought was a country singer. I thought that was like a New Orleans country singer, like Crawl Daddy Maga, but it's not. It's apparently it's a some sort of thing that allows you to kill Muslims. Anyway, so that was my fucking morning. But these interviews, man, they're good. The first interview is with Sarah Schaefer. Now, I'd never met Sarah before. I met her when during the last episode, Brooke Van Poplin came up to the hotel room. She brought up her friend Sarah. Now, I didn't get to meet every comic at this festival. I mean, I was there, I was performing, but there were like 170 of us or something, and the after parties were packed, and there were other people there, like just people from Portland found out about the after parties, and there were sort of some weird groupie type situations, and it was a little bizarre, and it was a little weird. So I didn't really get to do a lot of socializing with people I didn't already know. So this is Sarah and I meeting for the first time, actually. So it's not really even an interview. It's just a conversation. But she is a writer and a blogger for Jimmy Fallon's show, his late night show. And she's very accomplished. She's a young comedian in New York. She's out about town. She knows what she's doing, and she's an up and comer, in the true sense. Not like she's gonna do it. You're gonna hear good things from this young Sarah Schaefer, and again, I'm gonna do a follow up with her when I'm in New York in August. Hopefully, looking for apartments. So I'm gonna play that now. The second interview is with Solomon Giorgio, but I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna talk about him in between. Okay, so that's simple layout. Now, really fast, we're going to have to do number 4 in the countdown of the top 5 albums of the 90s. Okay? So here we go. I've got to figure out the sound cue thing. Walter's not here, so let me get the drum roll thing going. All right, here we go. All right, number 4 in the top 5 albums of the 1990s, In the Aeroplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel. Now, this album is incredible, but I think now in like the hipster sense, it's overrated because it sort of turned into this weird indie rock Rosetta Stone. It was almost like a starting point of something, but it all happened later. This album was released over 10 years ago, and recently has gotten popularity on a mass, still indie college sort of circuit. But these guys, it's a great concept record, mainly acoustic, very lo-fi. It's a concept album about Anne Frank and her struggle, and it's a love story. Sort of revolving the reincarnation of Anne Frank and the lead singer. They have like a homosexual relationship. The first time I heard this album, I was made a little uncomfortable by it, which most of my favorite albums make me uncomfortable at first. A lot of semen references going on in this album. A lot of talk about semen. And there's like a I got like a 2-semen limit on albums, but I think he drops the S word 4 or 5 times. This guy, Jeff Mangum. Now this band, they were on the label Elephant Six, which was a very, very sort of progressive independent rock label out of Athens, Georgia. Now I was in Nashville at the time, so I feel like a lot of these bands came through Nashville, and I think a lot of us got exposed to bands like, you know, Olivia Tremor Control and Apples in Stereo, Neutral Milk Hotel before a lot of the nation was. But this album, start to finish, is incredible. It has a reprise. The guy's voice is, you know, majestic. I feel a little weird saying that, but it's just incredible vocals. There's a lot of strange sounds in it where it sounds like a theremin, but it's actually a bowed saw. A lot of overdriven bass. But again, very, very lo-fi. But this is kind of a perfect summer album. Pop it in your car, drive down the street. You're going to love it. All right? You're going to love it. So put on the headphones. Do what you have to do. Number 4 on the top 5 albums of the 90s, Neutral Milk Hotel, In the Airplane Over the Sea. All right, everybody. Here's Sarah Schaefer. What's up?
Not much.
I don't know you at all.
I know.
Brooke told me before you got up here. You blog for Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
You won an Emmy.
Yes, I did. Thanks, Brooke. Thanks, Mommy.
That's fucking awesome, man. I mean, what?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. I don't know anything. No, that is awesome. What? So you obviously live in New York.
Yes, I do. I've lived there a long time. And
do you do stand-up?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, cool.
I feel bad. Yeah, no, this is my first year here, and cool. I was lucky to get on some good shows, and I've had a great time. I definitely hit my wall last night and had to check out. Like, I'm learning my limits as a social being. Like, I think 72 hours of socializing with comedians is my cutoff, and like last night I had a point where I was like, I'm done, get me out of here. Like,
right.
I can't. And I imagined going to the after party, like, and repeating the night before. And I was just like, I can't do this.
What was the night before all about? Little Bridgetown
hookup?
Little Bridgetown hookup?
No.
There's been some of that going on, by the way. And it's very weird to me.
This
is not a field trip.
This is not
a band trip. Stop with the fingering.
No, I love fingering. It gets to a point where I'm tired of talking about. I'm tired of having small talk with people. Like,
I am that person
where, like, after so many hours of straight days of small talk with people, I completely shut down. I can't even. It's like everything, part of my body. Yeah. I'll go to L.A. if it's for something very big. But,
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there.
I don't recommend it to anyone.
But, I'm not. I just kind of was like, oh. Nope. And then this, like, strip club thing today, I was just like, fuck this shit. No way. I'm going to, I went and sat in a park and literally just stared for about an hour. And I feel so much better right now. I feel so alive.
That's awesome.
Just not having to talk to anybody. And I'm more introverted than I forget that I'm
basically
introverted.
What you're saying, this is bad. You don't want to be doing this right now.
This is fine. I love small conversations with people that are real, but like party conversation and like where
somebody
people are on and trying to be hilarious.
I hate it when people are on, and that's
I love it for a while, but there comes a point.
I don't
where
even love
I'm
it for
like,
a while. I can't stand it.
I get exhausted. It takes an enormous amount of energy for me to be in that mode for a long time. To sustain that is very hard for me.
No,
there are some
like
people that gives them energy. They're extroverts.
But they're talking at each other, not with each other.
Yes.
And I don't like the fucking riffage, you know?
Yeah, I get to a point where I can't.
I want to talk about music and shit. Like,
well, and I also I got tired of seeing people do stand up. Like, it started to just sound like someone screaming at me. Like, I couldn't hear the comedy anymore. I was just like, I gotta get out of here.
Well, one thing that's interesting to me is a lot of comics. I think a lot of stand up. If you listen to it,
and took out the laughter and took out the context. It's just someone bitching.
Someone bitching. A lot of times it's somebody having a complete meltdown. It's right. Someone having an enormous amount of pain that they are sharing, especially when you see someone who's having a sort of what I call like a breaking down.
A vulnerable
set, moment. Where they're yeah. like, it's not going well. And it can be really funny when they turn it around that way and like, no, I know. You bunch of fucking idiots. Like, I'm an idiot. Blah, blah, blah. And like, it turns into a like, I suck. You suck. Oh, my fucking life. It's going in the, you know, like when a person does that on stage, it can be funny, but it's also, it's so much pain. There's so
yeah,
much
yeah,
pain.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Well, I think but if you take, a lot of times if you take it out of the context, it's not, you know, that's not yeah. really my kind of comedy that I'm into. It's just someone just complaining.
Yeah. Well, Maria Bamford is one of my favorite
She's
comedians.
Great.
And I saw her last night. And I was about 30 minutes away from my meltdown.
Okay.
And I was like, I wasn't laughing at all. I was just listening to her and enjoying it. But yeah. I wasn't laughing. And I was like, why am I not laughing at one of my favorite comedians? And I was like,
well,
I am going to lose my shit.
Most of my favorite comics, even when I am in a laughy mood, I'm not really laughing. Like if I see like Louis C.K., my jaw's open, but it's not even comedy. It's just like, I'm just like, oh, fuck you. Like, I just, you know
no,
what I mean? I'm
no,
just staring.
I enjoy comedy. I'd never get.
No, no, I really enjoy
angry.
It, but I'm saying, like, I don't really. Yeah. No, I don't laugh when I watch Maria. I'm just like, that's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, my head is laughing. I'm having a mindgasm, but it's. sure. How'd you get the. That's a great gig you've got.
It's awesome.
This
found
gig.
The story is I moved to New York. I started doing comedy. I did everything. I did sketch, improv, stand up. Like I just went on all levels. It took me a year before I had the courage to do anything.
How long
I got
ago?
There. I was in 2001. I moved there. And
so you've been at it since 2001.
9 years. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Cool.
There was a year or two, a year when I got there that I didn't do anything. I was just too afraid.
That's
I was
normal.
And I was getting used to New York.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
But I worked really hard. I produced my own show, which got me some recognition locally. And then I got an audition for this to host a show for AOL online. I interviewed bands.
Okay.
And that was like my first anything. I had been on like Best Week Ever once before
right.
that. And I got that. And that was like my introduction to the internet, you know, being an internet person.
Yeah.
And that was right when I remember when I got it, I was like, this is so awesome, but it's the internet. Fuck. And then like 2 weeks later, Lazy Sunday came out and YouTube exploded. And everyone was like, how'd you get that job? And I was
right.
Like,
right.
Well, I don't know. I settled. And now I realize
now,
I'm in the place where everyone wants to be. But
2 or 3 years from now, the internet will be TV.
I don't know. I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm not intelligent enough to see the future in that way. There are some people who are they can see forward like that. I'm not one of those people, but after the AOL thing, I started blogging for Best Week Ever.
Okay.
And then from that I got the Fallon gig. So it's a really cool job. I always have wanted to work in late night. So for me to get that job was one of the best moments of my life.
That's awesome.
And then for it to be so successful and for that part of the show to be so important to Jimmy. And like,
yeah,
it's I've learned everything that I could learn about. I'm like primed to like move forward with my
yeah.
career, but I don't know if I'll be able to make it happen on Fallon, but like I want to write or be, I mean, whatever. Now I'm being like, I don't want to tell you what I want because it's embarrassing. It's what we all want. But
no, of course, of course.
I want what everyone wants. it's not one pie, though. We can all make our own pie.
Of course, of course.
But
so you want SNL?
No, I don't want SNL. I want I would like to host a show, a TV show, whether it's a late night show or something else. Like I would like to be a host. I think that's what I'm suited
yeah,
for.
Yeah.
But
well, I do think
and then I'm like, or well, if you're if you're giving out multi-million dollar contracts, mm-hmm. I would also like to be in a TV show, in a film and
Exactly.
Yeah,
and own a bakery. That's just the thing
yes.
I've always wanted.
And have a farm.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I want a ranch.
Family.
Yeah. I
already
want a farm
started
and
already
a family.
Started.
Of course.
But yeah, so I'm working towards all that. And but and I'm all firing at all cylinders right now. I'm like
that's
working
awesome,
really
though.
Hard on my stand up too, which is in some ways more attractive and appealing to me right now than my day job. It's becoming my day job, which I'm like, what? That was my dream, and now I'm like, I want to do more stand up.
So do you go into like 30 Rock to do the blogs? Do you just
do it from home? Yeah, I work at the office. I do a lot of other stuff for the show, like research and just anything interactive that's on the show. I'm in charge of it. So
cool. Wow.
I am involved in the show a lot in the production.
Yeah.
And I go to the writers' meetings every morning and so I'm in it.
So
it's
do you
tough.
Go home, grab a nap, and then go do spots?
I don't go home because in New York, it's the same thing in L.A. You live too far away from I live in Brooklyn and all the shows are in Manhattan. And so I'm out for the day when I leave. And then.
OK.
But I'm.
How much sleep do you get every night?
Not that much. And I'm like worried because I have a lot on my plate coming up, which is awesome. I'm so excited. I'm getting lots of shows and stuff. But I'm like, I'm going to have a complete meltdown at some point. Sarah's going to have a temper tantrum.
Well, but then, you know, you'll release that and that'll be okay. Have a safe one.
Hopefully,
have a safe
hopefully
meltdown.
It won't be on stage when it matters.
No, well then just bail. I've had moments where
just
like this
leave.
Is going to hurt me more if I don't bail.
Yeah,
so you bail and you go home and you cry and then you fucking, release that energy.
Yeah. But yeah, I, right now I'm fine.
That's awesome.
So
I'm
maintaining.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So, I have always been curious about this, the blogging for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I notice lots of times if you Google something, there are a lot of blogs that pop up, but they're and obviously you're doing comedy, right? You're doing real blogs, but a lot of them it's just buzzwords to attract hits, like a weird. Is there a technique to that?
I've learned a lot about making your content easily findable. Like we. I don't know if you saw when Zach Morris came on late night, Mark Paul Gosselaar dressed up as Zach Morris and did an interview as Zach Morris with Jimmy, which was like definitely by far the biggest video online we've had. Like it got viewed like 3 million times or something.
Wow. Cool. Cool.
And now when you Google Zach Morris, it's his appearance on our show is like the first thing that comes up. So, I mean, there's like, that was one of the visionary things that the producer on the show, Gavin Purcell, and Jimmy knew is that to do a blog. Most TV shows don't have a blog. They have just a landing page, and their content is just exploding at you in a million different boxes, and it's, like, really annoying. And
right,
user
of course,
friendly. You don't return to that website unless you need to see a specific thing. And they knew that with a blog, the way a blog works and the way it is set up is that it's, like, a long tail of continual traffic that will come back because you're creating all these tags and it's constantly being updated and the more content you have, the more traffic you'll have and then
course,
the more money you
course.
Can make and it's part of the business.
Now,
so
do you do the tweeting too?
Yeah, we do the tweeting. That's the part of my job I don't like. Like when I was at Best Week Ever, my only job was to write funny blog posts.
Okay.
I was very excited about it. My writing improved so much in a very short amount of time.
You have,
but
by
now
the way,
I do a ton of marketing and stuff.
Those
like
are the
that,
most
so.
Blogger fucking sunglasses I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And I didn't know, how to define those before because I see those
they
sunglasses.
Are,
but now
let me
I
describe
know.
Them for you. They
That's
are
an
yellow
presence.
Plaid,
yellow
like
plaid
80s
print.
Style sunglasses. I got them at Strawberry's for $3.
No, but that's a.
And I've never gotten more complimented on any accessory I've owned.
This hat, I don't know what this hat means, by the way, but it's polarizing in this town for some reason. People look at me like, fuck yeah, or like, ugh. And I don't.
Is it because it's a trucker hat or because of the tape skull?
I don't know. It's representing something I don't know about.
You might want to look it up. It might
I need
be like,
to look that up.
Like racist or.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like,
exactly. It's some obscure like sect
you know.
Of the Klan.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really interesting stuff. So, you know, I mean, obviously you're in with the right people. I mean, you're getting the stuff done.
Yeah, it's been an awesome opportunity. I'm very grateful for it.
Of course, of course. So what's the next immediate step?
I'm
gonna go back
I'm
to New York.
I'm thinking a little
after
bit
this.
Like Brooke. I would love to do stand up on TV. I don't think I'm ready. I'm not as ready as she is. No, I mean it's definitely true. I'm a fucking mess on stage. Brooke has a what is known as a tight pussy. I'm just kidding. A tight set. I'm sorry. Did I say pussy?
Oh jeez.
Not on this
No, we keep it classy. My co-host is a robot.
I am going through something with my comedy. I'm going through something.
Well, no, that's
I'm going through something
where
I'm figuring out some things about my identity.
Cool.
In general, so it's a big lot of change in my life right now. So I'm excited about the material. I want it to become something bigger.
Yeah.
And so I want to work on that a lot. That's what I wake up wanting to do right now, which is
I gotta fucking move to New York. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, there's
what the fuck am I doing?
I do a show, a booked show, every night. I don't do any open mics. I mean, I've been there a long time, but I, the way I see it, it's not that hard. You go there. There are so many. It is exploding right now. Yeah. There are so many small shows in New York that are booked shows. It's not. You don't have to sign up. Once you work it and you figure out how to do it, you can do a show every night. Now, some of these shows are total fucking shit, but you need to do shit shows.
Yeah, of course.
And there's so many funny people there, and it's you know, it's just so much opportunity to do stand up.
Yeah.
There's not that much opportunity for like TV and stuff, but it's there.
Who gives a fuck?
There's a little bit there.
Yeah. Okay.
Comedy Central
I'm moving to New York. Gonna move in with you guys. I know you don't live together, but I'm still gonna move in with you guys. All right. Thanks, Brooke.
You need to, if you're gonna come to New York, though. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how. I'm sure it's the same thing in LA. You need to accept the fact you're gonna have to make money somehow. Yeah. You can't coast by in New York on like, you know, fumes or like crashing with people, you know, like
I know.
A plan.
I know. No, I do the road a lot and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm making the rent. Yeah. I'm doing my thing.
I would like to do more of the road. I haven't figured that. I'm getting more, but I haven't
figured
that
out. It kicks you in the ass. They're not smart. These are not smart people.
Oh, I know.
These are not smart people, and you have to figure out a way to still make them laugh without playing guitar or humping
a
stool.
This is what I mean. I want to produce little shows and little art galleries in small cities across the Southeast.
Yeah, you mean.
And I want to do colleges, liberal arts colleges, and get paid
right
for that. Like, that's what I want. I want to do it my way. Like, I do not belong in a comedy club. Like, I would get booed.
And I think these days you don't have to. You don't have to belong in a comedy club. It's okay. So, I think it's actually starting.
I'm figuring it out.
It's not where it needs to be, but I think it's accepted as an art form, finally. And the rolled up blazer tennis shoe image is sort of getting out of people's heads. They still don't want to sit up front. They still think everyone's going to, who killed the couch? But it's still, you know, I think it's getting there. I think it's getting there. Yeah. And people like you are helping move that along. So thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Is that a good wrap up? Was that a good segue?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I think that was good.
That was good. Don't give up on your dreams.
Don't. Don't do it, Sarah. Don't do it, Sarah.
I'm going to jump off this balcony now. I'll see you
okay
later.
Cool. So new apartment opening up in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh boy, Sarah Schaefer, what a sweetie. Make sure to add Sarah and all the stuff, all the social stuff, or check out the Fallon blog, you know, because that's her as well. I'll also be doing a follow-up with her when I'm in New York in August, and we'll see how she's getting along. And so then Sarah and Brooke left the balcony, and I was left with Solomon Giorgio and Mark Allender. Now, Mark is I think, brilliant animator and cartoonist and illustrator, which he's on the next episode. Now, this is an interview with Solomon Giorgio, who's an openly gay comedian who was born in the Sudan to Ethiopian parents as a refugee. Pretty interesting stuff, and we're going to talk about it. All right, you guys, I'm a big fan of his comedy. I really do. I'm not just pandering to my guests here. This guy's going to blow up. So, Solomon Giorgio, everybody. Enjoy.
Have you gone back to visit?
I've been to Ethiopia a few times growing up.
What's that like, man?
It's hot. Starving people. My thing. Not my scene.
No, but I mean, that's got to be terrible.
It is terrible in a sense. But there's also the fact Ethiopia's old, old history, and you get to check out a bunch of shit that's goes way back when. There's a place that they believe the Ark of the Covenant's supposed to be is there, and it's being protected by monks who speak Coptic.
Wow.
So it's
what's the Ark of the Covenant?
Ark of the Covenant is supposedly crap. Yeah, I know it's an Indiana Jones, but there's a reason for its existence.
It's an ark.
And there's no, it's actually...
it's not Noah's Ark?
More like a treasure chest. Yes, yeah, so, yeah, the Ten Commandment tablets are supposed to be in the Ark of the Covenant. That's where we go.
Okay.
So and
that's in Ethiopia.
No, it's one of the rumored places, but no one is able to go to any of the rumored places because they're very well protected.
Because they don't exist.
There's some Illuminati shit going on.
Because they don't exist.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll go for that one because I don't believe in God.
You're gay. Why would you?
Yeah, why?
Okay, so
he doesn't like me, and I'm just gonna decide that he doesn't exist.
No, he's no. If there's a God, he loves you, buddy. Come on, Solomon. Now,
oh, yeah.
Solomon, I'm a huge fan of your stand-up. I've been a huge fan of your stand-up for a while. You,
I'm a big fan of yours.
Huh?
I'm a big fan of yours. Sorry, I was my secret.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yes.
Thanks. Thanks. I hope you're a great liar. Mm-mm. That's.
Honestly.
Oh, thanks, dude. Thank you. I'm working it out. No, I'm a huge fan of yours, Solomon, and you are. Let me be honest with you. You're the one that's gonna make it.
I don't.
No, you are. You are, and I'm glad the fact that you don't know that is why you're good, because if you knew that, you'd be a dick.
Well, that's things that I honestly, I believe I've already made it in my head as far as I'm concerned.
No, you're of course.
What the definition of success is being able to do what you love. As far as
absolutely, absolutely.
If that's it, then yeah.
No, and you're there, but you know what I mean. You're gonna you know, you've never met the Booker for Letterman. You're gonna do it before me.
Israel?
Oh, you have met him.
I've met him.
He's been through Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to showcase for him, so that was.
Oh, did you do a Letterman showcase or that comedy festival?
It was for the comedy festival.
What did he give you feedback?
He booked it in the middle of someone's set, which was unfortunately after mine. So.
He what?
He left.
Oh, he left. Left. Yeah. I thought you meant he booked the festival.
He totally booked the festival, and he was like.
Right there.
You're in. No. I have no idea what's going on in regards to that festival yet. I'm pretty sure that I think that his distaste for what happened later in the night was.
All right, we'll keep it diplomatic. We'll keep it diplomatic.
We'll see.
Wow. Okay. Seattle has a way of embarrassing itself to no end in front of outside in front of outside industry. Some of that's happened here at this very festival.
It's true. The thing is that it's like, well, Seattle does an amazing job at producing some amazing people, but it is terrible at representing itself when people come through.
Right. Well,
it's like, we will give you amazing comics when they go to you.
Well, that's I think that's because enough comics say, dude, fuck this, and they leave. There's so much stage time in Seattle. It's a breeding ground of creativity and apathy and bitterness and everything you need to be a good comic. But it's like in Seattle, if you have 5% work ethic, you win. You're the king of the town. You know what I mean? Mark Allender is the cartoonist. You're the comedian.
Yeah,
what I mean? That's like fucking.
To get to the level I was so quickly at Seattle was mind blowing, but it was mostly you're nice. Yeah, I am
but
a
no,
nice
me
person.
Too.
Genuinely,
I moved to Seattle and it was like, you know, it took like a month. But
it's a great city that gets you so depressed that it's easy to define yourself eventually.
right.
It's like, I know what kind of brand of sadness I am.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I have a unique depression that I feel is very marketable.
Yeah.
And that's great, man. So you came up in Seattle. And you've always been a beloved son of Seattle.
Yeah.
Which I want to resent, but you deserve it, so I can't. No, it's one of those things. If it was anyone else, I'd say fuck that guy. But you're just brilliant and funny enough to pull it off.
Well, the thing is, I'm also, when it comes to Seattle, I've been there for so long that when it's just like the connections that I had were somewhat in existence before I even stepped on that stage.
Yeah,
living
sure.
in Seattle for so long and doing the artistic things I was doing outside of doing stand-up.
Okay, that's our interview angle. What were you doing?
Oh, crap.
I didn't know the pre-stand-up Solomon.
The pre-stand-up Solomon was...
Because you have always been in other scenes. Most comics, that's their identity.
Yeah.
They're only friends with comedians. They're only... That's it. But you know people and shit.
Yeah. I go back a while.
You do other stuff. It's amazing.
I've been performing since I was 4 in musical theater.
Okay.
And that... the kibosh went on that when my voice decided to go Hayward, and change. And then from there, I've been in acting, and I've done spoken word, which I really can't take back. I can't turn.
I did it once. I've done it.
Fucking, I can't.
I was in a band, and we forgot our guitars one night, and we had some poetry that we'd written. No, because I'm totally serious. We had some poetry we'd written.
Oh, and I want to hear some of that poetry.
We're like, fuck
badly.
It. We're hammering this shit out. We're gonna do it, and we did it. And it was. I can't take that back.
No, you can't.
I have to live with that every morning when I wake up. I have to live with the fact that I did spoken word.
Oh God, and the thing is that Seattle is such a small town, and if you live there,
it's
enough,
a small
and,
big city.
And if
it's
you
weird.
Do, yeah, and if you're in you're in so many scenes, like
dude,
and
I went through
so
a breakup and moved. Yeah. I can't hang out.
Yeah, people know you now. Everyone right. knows you now.
Everybody.
That's what happens. Yeah. You walk in, and that's the thing. Is like it constantly happens where like I'm connected to this person and this and like and it's like and then somebody turns around to me and goes, "Man, isn't it weird?" Like, no, it's not weird. If you live, it's the way it is.
Dude, I feel like 10 people live in Seattle.
Yeah.
Like I know there's a huge population. Where are they? I don't know. Is there a subterranean culture? because. You go to like Belltown, it's yeah. fucking dead. You go to Capitol Hill, it's packed or whatever. But you know everyone.
That's true.
And it's really weird. The same faces, it just repeats and
like,
repeats. And
like any single person in Seattle, I've lived there so long that even if I don't know who they are, I probably know at least one or two of the people that they know. And it's ridiculous. But I like that kind of feeling because it's fun, but like it's the thing that's very tough about it is that I have to quickly develop material because there's so many of the same people.
That well, let me tell you something. That's tough, but that's great.
It is
about it because, dude, Seattle. When I came to Seattle, I had 20 minutes that sucked. I had 5 that I liked, and I still use maybe 3
yeah.
of that. Now. There were so many people every night, week in, week out, whether it be Laugh Hole or at Laughs
yep.
or at Comedy Underground, where it's like you have to have new material
yep.
or people go out and smoke. And most of it was shit, you know, but you have to.
True.
It made me write.
It is. You have no choice but to write. And it's like I feel bad because I'm like, oh, God, I've told this joke for the last 6 months. I have to fucking sandwich in between. New jokes, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
But it's fun, but there's a ceiling, and my head keeps hitting it over and over again.
What do you mean a ceiling? Creatively?
Not creatively, but booking wise, it's.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's the glass elevator. Yeah. That's when you go to New York, you get out. Now you gave San Francisco a whirl for a minute.
Yeah, I did.
What happened, man?
Well, nothing really bad happened in San Fran. The comedy scene there is amazing, and I was having a good time, and I was opening doors there. Problem is that I'm still not in the place not to have a day job, and I'm not. I'm a shitty like as.
Dude, I have to get a day job soon.
Well,
I'm gonna have to. I don't know. I don't know how I'm gonna handle it. But
it's terrible. I hate doing it. But the thing is that it requires like I have to have a day job because I don't do the road. Which would
well,
make
I remember
me money.
When you left Seattle to go to San Francisco, mm-hmm. it was like there was like 3 months of Roman level celebrations and feasts.
Yes.
And then you fucking came back like a week later.
Yeah.
like the mayor handed out bread and all and then you were just back a week later.
Yeah.
And I'm like you were like you came into your going away show like on a chariot. And then you were just back, and it was like, oh, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, I know, and believe me, that's how I felt too. But like, I can only afford to live on no money for so long.
Of course,
and
can't we all?
Was,
can't
was,
we all?
It was a good solid 2 months of doing shows and working my balls off to find a job.
Yeah.
And it wasn't happening, and then I came back, and now I'm smarter, and know that day work is gonna have to come before I can move anywhere. But yeah, New York is definitely gonna happen. That is,
dude, you're gonna be huge in New York.
And I'm gonna sneak out this time. I'm not gonna fucking high kick and do cartwheels.
You know what's weird? I don't think they're gonna let you sneak out because I tried to sneak out, and then but I'd have some shit booked before I left. Like I had like an Alan Thistle show.
That's true.
Just a Thursday show, and then I showed up and it wasn't like a surprise party, but it was like it had been tweeted about and shit as Jesse's going away thing and all this stuff, and it wound up like. Everyone that leaves Seattle, you don't even mean to, but you have 2 weeks of going away shows.
It's true.
Just because that's the marketing.
There's no up and down. It's just like, oh, it's his final show. Final show.
I log into Facebook. I see I've been tagged in a photo, and it's like this huge poster. Like, Jesse Case going away special. It's like, no, fuck. I was just going to do some old jokes.
You told me to come roll
I was just trying to make $50, man. I don't want
to go away.
Right. I kind of wanted to skirt out of there.
Yeah.
No, but that's great, man. And you really are. It always takes a while.
Yeah. I have nothing but patience when it comes to things. The thing is that I know that I can do small shows. I can do open mics. I can produce my own show if I.
Well, and you're in with the right people, man. Some of those guys that left Seattle before, they're doing a lot of cool shit, like downtown.
But I just know that, it's good to have those connections, but I know better than just to rely on that.
Of course. Well, and you have to keep your finger in many a pie.
And I also like having my own thing. It's fun to have my own thing and have people being a part of it. So I love producing shows. So.
Exactly, and that's very important. Like when I when I came to Seattle, I knew Billy Wayne Davis from Nashville. Yeah. And we would see each other and do some shows sometimes, but it's not, I had to do my thing.
Yeah.
And he did his thing, and that's what happened.
That's what happened. Yeah, it's the way it goes.
And when I go to LA, I know some Seattle guys and I see him every now and then, but I got to do my thing.
And
we all have to do this alone, but we're all in it together, and that's the beauty of it.
It makes it a lot more fun because it's just the powwow. It's the coffee break.
Absolutely.
That's the way I like it. We're always hanging out around the water cooler.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
And
talking about rape.
Yeah, those are my favorite parts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Solomon, thanks so much for being
Thank
on,
you.
Man. What do you have coming up, dude?
Oh, crap. I got shows Seattle.
You're on the Facebook. You're on all the
Facebook,
stuff. People
yeah.
can, people can,
I
everybody
exist on
add
that
everyone that I've ever had on here.
Yeah.
So you're on that stuff. Are you doing the road at all? You getting out? Are you sticking
here
to Seattle?
And there,
till you
but
move?
I'm sticking a lot to Seattle, and then I'm gonna be. I'll be in LA in July. I'm working on that stuff right now.
Do you have a place to stay?
I do.
Oh, we talked about this. Yeah, you're staying with John.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm figuring things out for that right now, and then. But until then, I'm just.
Well, let me know when you come down, and I will get you some spots.
All right, I will let you know.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Sub or dom?
Sub or dom?
Yeah, sub or dom.
Oh, in regards to, yeah, I'm dominant.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever had a dick in the ass? It's not fun. It's not, it's not okay.
That's hilarious. That is fucking hilarious. Like, I guess that's never occurred to me, is that that most homosexual people still.
That's what that means, is dick in your ass.
Well, it's like. That's just funny because I hear a lot of rednecks talking like I don't like the gay thing. I wouldn't take a dick in the ass. But I think the majority of gay people are like, yeah, dude, it sucks. Like,
it's not. But some people who love it, they're fucking power bottoms. They're
what's a power bottom?
It's pretty much their assholes like a suction cup. They just move the.
Like some Kegel
like
thing.
You've had sex with a good pussy that can just kind of fucking wrangle around the penis and be like, just give you like a soft dick massage kind of.
Yeah, I guess, but
you have to understand the butthole has a lot more muscles.
It
than,
does.
So
it does. But I would also assume that men have. Surely there's some more muscular pushing out those shits. Stronger
buttocks.
A stronger
less
buttock.
Body fat.
Well,
more muscle in that area.
Well, women have a stronger core.
Yeah.
Because of the pushing out the babies.
Yeah.
So the women do like ab exercises that'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
Like to them, like Pilates, no big deal. And if I do it for 5 minutes, I can't get out of bed the next day.
Well, let me like yeah, just.
But men, I think.
Not that hard to work out our ass. It's
so
not,
then,
it's
so
really just walking upstairs, and such.
Right.
Yeah,
right. Well, I'm a mess. My body's a mess. it's a mess. But
I'm not gonna tell. I'm gonna tell you the same about mine. I'm not. Well,
I don't think anyone's proud of their nakedness. But I But okay, so a power bottom is very interesting. Now, what kind of? I assume that when you go for a, I've never met any of your. I know there have been some men in your life since I've known you, but I've never met a.
I've never dated anyone. I've recently been on a date. I've just recently dated someone for the first time in my life.
For how long? How long?
That was a month and a half.
And that ended?
Yeah, I ended that.
Okay. Well, I would assume. I mean, so what kind of dude do you go for, man?
I don't know. It's. Somebody who's not obnoxious, somebody who's
right,
who's not easy on the eyes.
Someone who is easy on the eyes,
yeah,
and not obnoxious.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I find that, and maybe you don't even have a problem with this. I've always had a problem with the term straight because it implies crooked.
Yeah.
or something like that. But for pop culture, we'll say straight.
Yeah.
Straight men, same issue. It's like at the end of the day, a poon's a poon, and an asshole's an asshole. Okay. No, I'm serious.
I'm agreeing with you.
But I'm saying, as far as that human cerebral connection,
uh-huh.
there's just as much obnoxious bullshit. And I think the ratio is about the same of like cool gay dudes yeah. and cool straight women.
Well, I think it goes for the same for all categories of sexual orientation. There's a lot of fucking obnoxious straight
Most
men.
People suck. Is that yeah, what we're saying?
That's where I'm, yeah, people suck, and you got to find that person that doesn't suck.
You
got to
find your 1%
and
stick with it.
We'll fucking power bottom for you.
Okay, that's a little weird. Yeah, because there is another niche. You have to define that too. So that eliminates like 50%. Okay, so
that eliminates 75%. I'm probably dealing with 10% of the.
Okay, so let's say this. What percentage of people do you think are gay but admit they're gay? They're out about it. I think a lot more people.
Well, there is information that says that there are 10% of the population is categorized as homosexual.
They categorize themselves, though?
I don't know how, because nobody asked me that question.
So let's make it.
I don't know how they got that number.
Well, let's say they got that number through surveys.
I'm sure they didn't.
But let's say they did. If 10% of the population is gay through surveys, that mm-hmm. means that easily 15% is gay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's the self-denial. There's all that. There's the got caught by their parents giving a hand job, so their parents forced them to go to monastery school. Now they fuck kids. There's that gay. There's the foot tapping gay. There's a lot of gay going
There's a whole lot.
So let's say 15 to 18% of the population is gay.
Okay.
Okay, so that let's say 1/5 of people, which I feel is a lot. I don't think it's that many.
That's probably not.
I think it's closer to 1/7.
Yeah.
Okay, 1/7 of the population is gay. How many of them are power bottom? How many of those are male?
I think
half of gay people male, or they're more lesbians?
I would probably say
they're
I think there are more women who are able to
take the bullet.
Able to go both ways. I think some ladies who are straight most of their lives can be like, it's time for me to switch over.
So let's say 1% of people are 1% of people are gay men.
We'll say 3%.
3%
to 4%.
3 to 4% are gay men. Now, okay, 3 to 4% are gay men.
Yeah.
So 1%, that's 25% of the gay men. 1% of those would be power bottoms.
We'll say that. I'd probably say it's less than that, but yeah.
Okay, so 1% of the population.
Because there are bottoms and there are power bottoms. Power bottoms are.
What you want.
They've mastered technique.
They've mastered the technique.
I'll be honest with you. It is not really something that I really am too concerned about. I prefer the more dominant role, but I don't.
But you're an attractive guy. You can get laid. But sometimes it's. All right. Sometimes annoying, but sure.
Yeah.
But you can make it happen. So let's say there's that. Then you have to eliminate the obnoxious factor, which is just 90% of people,
exactly.
No matter what they're into. That's 90% of people. So basically, there's. Let's do the math. There's like 5 people.
Yes.
That you can. In the world.
In the entire world.
I feel the same way. I feel that there's maybe 14 women that I'm capable of like actually settling down with. Now, probably one of them speaks English. Because the rest have got to be like Hindu or something. And she might be like 90. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. She.
One of them's a mollusk. Like. It's fucking awful, dude. So, I do the math in my head. I think you know, eHarmony can't help me.
That would probably break my heart if I found out my soulmate's like a sea lion and I'm just
right.
I'm like, but
you know, fuck it.
Time
to get those sea legs.
Exactly.
time to do it.
I will wash the algae from your back.
Be with you
forever.
Right. Well, you go to New York. You got to move by the docks.
Exactly.
You know, get a nice shanty. And make it happen.
Yeah,
I want to live in a shanty at some point in my life.
I personally
I want to be one of those shanty guys that like I want to drink.
I was born in something similar to a shanty, so my goal is not. I don't want to do the full circle.
Were you born in a refugee camp?
I was born in the camp.
Wow.
In a nice. It was beautiful little dirt hut. I have pictures of me when I was a little kid that look like sponsorship photos.
Wow, dude.
Just me playing in the dirt. And my dad's taking pictures like, oh, he's so hungry.
Can I have one of those photos and tell
you? Are not even, no.
No, I want to tell people. I want to tell girls, like, this is the kid I sponsor.
You can get those photos online for free.
There has to be. You know what's a great idea for a website is like a. It'd be called like Datebait. Datebait.com. And it just has shit
tools,
you can download.
Yeah.
Like pictures of a puppy. And it has a bunch of puppies where you could download a photo. Pictures of cute kids. pictures of kids you can sponsor. Fake surgeon doctorates.
Yeah, that's actually what I was about to say. That'd be amazing. That like fake degrees that you can put on the wall.
Fake degrees. Pictures of penises of all skin tones that are way bigger than yours.
Exactly.
You know, that you can sext message
to
someone.
Yeah, you can throw that online and be like, look at this. This is my gigantic dong.
Now you have.
I want to be the stock photo for that penis.
You'd be a great stock
FU.
Photo. Now yeah, you I have would. A. So you were born in like this weird District 9 shit. Were you born by.
I was born in the Ethiopian embassy, and there, like, it was a city. It was just fucking dirt huts, outside of the major city in Sudan. So
Jesus,
yeah.
Man. Now you, okay. There's one more thing I want to ask you about. And I'm gonna let you go.
Okay.
You have a joke which I think is a brilliant joke. I really, really do. It was the first joke that not that I even saw you do. It was the first joke that I saw in Seattle when I moved to Seattle.
Yeah.
That upset me that I didn't write it. It was the first one that makes you go, oh, fuck. But and it's, dude, it's really a brilliant joke. But it's the one where you talk about how you like homophobes because they create gay.
Oh, God, yeah.
They create gay people. And then you have that line.
I'm not gonna
bite the hand that makes the hand that's going to touch my penis.
Yeah.
Which is such a fucking awesome line. And then you say, like, how you're going to be in them or something. And you allude to having sex.
That's a tag that I don't really use.
But in the tag, you say 9 inches deep.
Yes, I do.
Do you have a 9-incher?
Yes, I do. That is my
You've measured?
I have been told.
You've been told.
I never measured it, but it's other people who
You've never
seen
measured.
It would explain to me how.
See, I've measured mine. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fully erect. And to get myself to 7.5 inches is the most I could squeeze out of it. Now, hear me out, though. I was in so much pain from jamming the ruler in, you know what I mean? To get the base. I think I like broke my pelvis. Like I was like, fuck, because it's like 5. So I had to like really get. I was like.
So you push it in at least an inch into your body.
Into my body.
That's not big enough.
yeah. Like, oh, sweet. It's so 7.5. And doing shit like. I want to take scissors and cut it off at 2 inches, so it just starts there. And then just I got 9. I got a 9er.
There you go.
So you. Wow, man.
It's not.
That's awesome, dude.
It's obnoxious. It's not. The thing is, when it gets to that size, people are like, "You're not putting that anywhere near my butthole," and
fuck you and your problems. that's like somebody's like, "Oh, a bird shit on my Lamborghini." Fuck you. Oh, my 9-inch cock. No one
you
wants
need to.
To
I should. I have a genuine reason to complain.
No one can handle my 9. No one can
take it. I just want someone who can take 9 inches of me.
No one can handle my giant black dick. Go fuck yourself.
I just don't like.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Good interview. Yes. Good interview. All right. Thank you, Solomon. Yes. Solomon Giorgio. All right, everybody. Solomon Giorgio. Well, that interview took an interesting twist. It's going to be weird getting the call from my mom after she hears this one. I tell you one thing. My parents are going to throw away that ruler. Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. I know it was a long one. Coming up, here's what we've got. Mark Allender, who you can hear laughing in the background of the Solomon interview. Got him coming up. Brett Hamill, my good friend. I'm going to be talking to Walter, checking in with him about how his festival week was going. I'm going to share some of my own experiences from the festival. I've talked very little about it myself. Faye Canale. And then I've got, she's very funny, Chicago, started in Chicago. Very funny young comic. And then Andy Wood, the booker and founder of the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. It's going to cap things off on the Bridge tapes. And then we're coming back to normalcy with Mr. Mark Maron and J.C. Coakley. Thanks again, everybody. Take care.